from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, it was good and had a good weekend. One weekend closer to college football, so I mean, honestly, it's just like trying to enjoy the last Saturdays of freedom, but then at the same time, just so much anticipation to the season arriving. And I know that like come October, November, I'll be fatiguing of like the really long work days on Saturdays, but like right now, I can't wait. And also, hey, I'm having a baby in mid-November, so my wife is. So, you know, my season's going to be a little shorter than normal anyway.
Yeah, yeah. You say you're looking forward to having freedom for one more weekend? I don't know. There's a freedom to watching college football on a Saturday. I know that you have to write up some things and you have to do more writing, but I don't know. I feel free having to getting to watch, you know, 60 some odd games every Saturday.
Right. And how does that work for you? Do you kind of prepare your wife to like let her know, "Hey, look, I'm off the grid. You know, you can't schedule me for anything all day on Saturday." Like, how does that play out?
You know what's great? This is why I married her. She watches alongside me. She can't miss a Memphis game, so that's always good. But she likes watching all the SEC matchups. She likes watching the non-con. She's excited. That's why I married the woman.
You got to keep her there. And thankfully, you know, Sarah is not a college football fan per se. But she understands, you know, that she knew what she was marrying. You know what I mean? So it's part of the job. It's just part of it. You know, Saturday from noon to midnight is going to be college football. Heck, in the central time zone, you know, it's 11 really. So, it's exciting. I'm ready for it to be here. Like, we've been talking about it and writing about it and reading about it and video gaming about it. And it's just like, man, I'm ready for some actual football.
Yep. Now, AP poll came out. Memphis was below Boise State and Liberty. I know that's sort of where you have them slated for the most part.
Well, I don't have them below Liberty.
Okay, but definitely below Boise State.
Yes.
Yeah, which is I think fair for the most part. But this top 25 we have, it's basically same idea as the coaches poll. Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon at 3 instead of Texas, but then you have Texas and Alabama. Ole Miss has their highest ranking since Archie Manning. They should be really excited about that. I saw that stat this morning. That's pretty phenomenal. First time they have been in the top 6 since Archie was on campus.
That brings some real perspective to what's expected at Ole Miss. Wow. Since Archie, that's incredible. Talk about pressure. But you know what? They're still fourth in the SEC in this AP poll. They're behind Georgia, Texas, Alabama. So, yeah, sixth in the country, fourth in the SEC. How about that?
Well, does the top four get you in the college football playoff, though, if you're top four in the SEC?
Maybe.
Okay.
I, So we're doing our conference predictions coming out soon, but we're submitting our ballots and all that this week. And my bold prediction for the Big Ten is that the Big Ten is going to lead the way with four college football playoff teams. Okay. And I'm not sure that I necessarily believe that the SEC is also going to have four. To me, I think there's more chance for attrition in the SEC, where you do have a deeper group of solid to really good teams. Whereas in the Big Ten, you've got your Michigan, Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State sort of tier, but then there's a pretty big drop off before you get to the other teams. Whereas in the SEC, you know, you got your Georgias, your Texas, your Alabama, your Ole Miss, but heck, you don't have to scoot too much farther down the list before you get to LSU and Tennessee and Oklahoma and other really good teams.
Right.
And they could all hand each other losses, which might impact the SEC's ability to get four playoff teams.
Yeah, but how much do you think all the offseason additions, all the new schools that are in the Big Ten, how much did that strengthen their case that they have every year when they're trying to compete against the SEC to be the best college football conference?
Yeah, I think the addition of Oregon is massive for that case. And then I think dissolving the divisions helps spread out the Big Ten's supremacy a little bit. So it's not just a one-division league where you've got Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State beating up on each other, and last man standing gets into the college football playoff. I mean, that's sort of the way it was in the Big Ten East, but now the competition is more evenly spread out amongst the schedules, and there isn't one team from that tier in the top of the Big Ten who you look at and say, oh, well, their schedule's just too tough. I don't know that they're going to be able to get it done. I look at Penn State, Ohio State, Oregon, and yes, even Michigan, in spite of everything that's going on there. And I do see four teams that could get into the playoff. However, I actually kind of think Iowa might have just as good of a shot as Michigan. Yeah, right. I know. I get you.
I understand. No, they're perennial 9 or 10 win team at the very least. That's just what they do.
Their schedule is massively advantageous. They do play Ohio State, but they don't play Oregon. They don't play Penn State. And they don't play Michigan. And they get a lot of the bottom feeders in the Big Ten. So just because of that schedule, I think Iowa, I mean, as awful as that quarterback situation still seems to be with some of these reports we're getting out of preseason camp, I do still believe that Iowa is at minimum a 9-win team.
All right, now I want to do this. Connor, we have some sound from Coach Prime late last week that we need to play. Let's go ahead and play this sound. Then I want to talk to a guy from CBS Sports about Deion's beef with CBS. Go ahead and play it, Connor.
That's the end of that question, I guess. Next guy.
Eric Christensen with CBS Sports Colorado.
Tyler, I'm not doing none with CBS. Next question.
Joe Rigo, my last
question. Ain't got nothing to do with you. It's above that. Ain't got nothing to do with you. I got love for you. I appreciate you. Respect you. Ain't got nothing to do with you. They know what they did.
I'm here in Denver, not national.
You are who you are.
CBS.
All
right.
Joe Rigo, my last question. I respect you. That's why I told you that. I'm looking you in the eye as a man. I respect you. I got love for you. But what they did was foul.
Okay, absolute petty machete right there. What's he mad about? What's he mad about with CBS Sports? What is he mad about with you guys?
Yeah, I don't know that I'm like honestly supposed to like get into this because I want to speak for the company. You know what I mean? Like,
right? No. I get it.
But I mean, this would be like somebody saying, "Well, Gabe, I'm not going to come on your show because I'm mad about something that Scott Van Pelt said." You know,
Not
92.9 ESPN with like SportsCenter or something, which like, okay, I mean, you could do that if you want to, but like you guys are totally different entities. Like,
right.
You're not emailing with Scott Van Pelt on a regular basis.
No.
So I feel bad. Or maybe you are, but I feel bad for the Denver guy. He's just like a local reporter. What he should have done, he should have identified himself by his letters. Like he should have said, you know, WREG or whatever his letters
Correct.
Are. Cause then, it wouldn't have triggered that, you know, that, oh, he's CBS sort of thing in Deion's mind. But, yeah, it wasn't my coach rankings. I mean, I just want to be clear about that. I've had multiple radio
that's what
requests.
That's what everybody assumed, though, because he was picked 15th out of 16th, right ahead of Kenny Dillingham.
My byline is on that story, Gabe.
Yeah, I know.
I'm driving in the car this morning, and I got the Peter Burns SEC morning show on in the car, and he's saying, you know, Deion Sanders is mad about this coach ranking that a guy from CBS Sports put out there, and he's not taking questions, you know, from CBS. And I'm listening to this thing, and wait, he's talking about my article. But that's not what this is about. And if I get the green light on this later this week, I'll tell you what it's about. But it's not that, even though, yeah, I mean, we did have him ranked 15th among the Big 12 coaches.
Is there anything broadly you can tell me, or no? It's just kind of...
He did have a qualm with, like, another article that was on CBS. But no, so what happened is once Deion put out this, that he had this issue with CBS... What everybody out there wants to know what it's about. So everybody starts Googling Deion Sanders CBS. So we see that, and so we bumped up all of our content that had Deion Sanders, you know, as the
subject right, or headline.
And so it looks like my coach rankings just came out, but really, I mean, those have been out for a couple months, and I'm sure he didn't love the fact that he was ranked, you know, next to last among the Big 12 coaches. But I mean, that was not the source of his fury or his anger.
Yeah, I still want to know. And the poor guy shouldn't have said he was CBS Colorado or CBS Denver, wherever he's from. That was way too petty for my liking. But I mean, what I generally think about Deion and what he's mad about, he could be mad with The Athletic as well. There's a lot of stories written about him this offseason about running guys out of the program. I think that's where a lot of his anger comes from. And, like, there was a lot of people reaching out to former players who were, you know, castigated by the program, who were willing to speak up on Deion. A lot of those were written this offseason.
Yeah, in particular, an Athlon piece comes to mind from a week or two ago that, you know, if you want to get mad about an article, pick one that's, like, kind of iffy journalism. And, I mean, I don't know this guy who wrote the Athlon article that I'm referencing, but it contains a lot of the things that you're talking about. Stories about what's gone wrong in the program, former players speaking out. But it uses a lot of anonymous sourcing, and it's just one of those things that, like, we kind of stayed away from because we're like, all right, we need some better corroboration on all this stuff. And, I mean, that's the kind of thing I'd get mad about if I'm a head coach, is, like, a story with inflammatory content that's sort of sourced in a very sketchy manner, right?
Yeah.
And we typically are not going to touch something like that. So, anyway, I mean, yeah, there's certainly content out there for Deion Sanders to be unhappy with, and including stuff I'm sure at CBS. But it's unfortunate for the local guy, you know, because the local guy is there just trying to get his package together for the 6 p.m. news.
Yeah, right.
And you know, he has nothing to do with anything, you know, national. So that's kind of stinks for that guy. He probably had a certain question he wanted to ask for a. He probably already shot his B-roll and everything for the story, and he just needed a quote from the coach. And, you know, now he's there and like, well, I hope somebody else asked the question I was going to ask because I still need that answer.
Well, that quote probably makes its own headway, right? That may be better for the story than any question he was going to ask.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, Deion's always a source of content. And, I mean, you think about it. I mean, Denver is not necessarily next door to Boulder, I don't think, so... They're sending somebody over there to cover Colorado press conferences. They're pretty invested in covering that program. And Deion's never not going to give you something. You're never going to go to cover Deion Sanders in Colorado and leave thinking, oh, man, I wish I worked harder to get a story. Like, he's going to give you a story, even if it's not the story you thought you were going to get.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I would say I took a little bit of issue with is all of the stories that were written about, you know, former players and giving them a voice. And that's what The Athletic did a story about it, where he was running guys out of the program, which we already sort of knew. But I find it strange, and I understand, like, you're going to write stories about the figures that are going to get you some more clicks, and I understand that part of the business. That's how you make some money. But at the same time, like, a lot of the stuff Deion Sanders has done and running guys out of the program has been done since we've played college football, right? Like, does that bother you at least a little bit? Because it definitely did for me with reading some of the stories that were written about Deion and his program this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a kind of an accelerated timeline for the way business is often done in college football. You got just mass departures, and it's all happening under the microscope. And a microscope that Deion Sanders, you know, really does invite. By nature of who he is, he's going to be covered, and his program is going to be covered with a pretty intense light. And he's doing something that no coach has ever done before. And of course, that's going to rub some people the wrong way. It's not on me to pass judgment on whether it's right or wrong. I'll say, like, if I had a son who was considering playing college football, I would give him a lot of reason to, you know, really consider whether or not Colorado and that staff is the staff you want to go and play for. But for some people, what he's selling is really attractive. And so, look, the Colorado content's not going to stop. I mean, tomorrow I've got a win totals piece coming out that, you know, I'm picking them on the under this year. And it's not anything personal with Dion or any sort of indictment on who he is as a coach. It's just, look, this is a really difficult way to build a roster when you're trying to fortify your trenches exclusively through the portal and you're competing against the richest programs in the sport for a very, very select group of offensive and defensive linemen. I mean, your margin for error is zero, and you got to hit on some guys that you probably, you know, have no business taking. And so your player development's got to be through the roof. And anyway, their schedule's really tough. There's just a lot of factors here with Colorado that I think are going to prevent them from making the breakthrough that a lot of people are hoping for.
Yep, for sure. Talking with David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, CBS writer for college football and college basketball. Now, something I learned this weekend, and especially through you, the ACC is the new conference of champions when it comes to the Olympic medals. The ECC is claiming 98 medals. What'd you think about that? I did get a kick out of the fact that you did point out Cal and Stanford accounted for 57 of the 98 medals that the ACC is claiming, and they just came over from the Pac-12.
Yeah, that's insane. It's like, can the SEC now claim Kyler Murray's Heisman Trophy?
Right.
I mean, right? Like, you know, and all the Oklahoma and Texas national titles, are those now SEC national titles because those teams are now in the SEC? I just thought it was so ridiculous for the ACC to actually like put out actual branded marketing, like claiming these gold medals from athletes at Cal and Stanford when they never competed in the ACC. It just reeks of desperation.
Yeah. But I get where the ACC needs to try to improve their brand. They're going through a lot right now. They need to try to put out as much as they possibly can to try to boost their brand around the country.
It struck me as like a Mike Oresko move, though.
For sure.
Like if he were in charge of the ACC, he would say he would claim all of those medals from Cal and Stanford. I'm like, what are we doing here, guys? I mean, this is clearly, you know, these athletes never competed in your conference. So anyway, I thought that was bizarre. But I mean, yeah, you're right. Like it's a conference that's kind of in a weak and very vulnerable position right now. And, you know, if Olympic sports are going to be something that you are proud of and celebrate and tout, then, like, you made some good additions with Cal and Stanford. But if you actually want to win football and basketball titles, you're not going in the right direction there.
Yeah. Now, what were your moments of the Olympics? What were your favorite moments?
Well, I mean, the Steph Curry three-point barrage, man, that was
semifinal that was, and the final.
Ridiculous. Just, I mean, it's nice to have him on your side for once, yep. You know, because we've been on the wrong side of some of those Steph Curry performances. Man, it is pretty cool when he's doing that for the team that you're rooting for. So that stuck out to me in a big, big way because it was special. Think about it, man. Like, this is probably it for Curry in terms of the Olympics. It's definitely got to be it for LeBron and KD, right? And now you got France on the upswing with Wimby and with some of the first two picks in this year's draft. I mean, we could be in a situation in LA 4 years from now where, you know, France and the U.S. are almost like neck and neck in terms of the Olympics in men's basketball. So, I mean, that was big for them to go out there and get that performance from Steph in hostile territory, probably the closest thing to like a college basketball environment that those guys will really see. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, and I'll say this with LeBron, because it's in LA, we're going to have debates leading up to the 2028 Olympics.
Oh, wow. Participate.
I hope this is my hope that he puts that to bed and almost immediately. And it seems like he kind of did. He talked about his future after the gold medal game, said, I can't see myself playing in LA in 2028. But he also in the same breath said, I didn't see myself playing in Paris in 2024. So I know that we'll have debates and talk shows talking about this up until LA 2028.
Well, what we need is for LeBron to say, you know what? I'm not going to play men's 5-on-5. I'm going to go play three on three.
We need his help. Good God, do we need his help.
We do. We need LeBron. He can even pick Bronny to play with him in the 3-on-3. I won't even be mad about that.
Okay, relax. LeBron. Relax a tad bit. Let's take it easy.
So, but here we go then. We'll do Steph. We'll do Steph, KD, LeBron, and Bronny. That'll be our three-on-three team for the 2028 games in L.A. I mean, who says no?
I think also with the three-on-three, why not go pick out of Ice Cube's league? Why not go to the big three and try to see what those guys are up to? Why not? Michael Beasley, that would be fun. I would definitely tune in to see some of those guys play.
Yeah. The big three was in Nashville this past weekend. And I saw.
Were they playing their championship?
I have no idea, but it looked like there were people who were actually there. And I was like, wow. So you get a pretty big turnout for this three-on-three league. You got some guys who were pretty good players back in the day. I mean, way more accomplished players professionally than the players that Team USA trotted out there in three-on-three. And I'm thinking, why don't we get some of these guys in it? And I think it's because to compete in the Olympics in the three-on-three competition, you have to be competing in the official, like, international three-on-three competitions. And I don't think the big three is sanctioned by that sort of division. So anyway, it's just like dumb politics. But, like, there's definitely talent out there that could elevate the USA's three-on-three game.
What do you think the 2028 Olympic team is going to look like? I think we're going to have some carryovers. Anthony Edwards. You'll probably have Anthony Davis, Bam Adebayo, Tyrese Halliburton, Devin Booker. We can have a different discussion about Jason Tatum after all of the problems that came with that. His mom speaking up, him speaking up. But let's focus on Ja Morant real quick. Do you think? Mm-hmm. I mean, how likely do you think it is he's on that 2028 team?
Well, I mean, that's the direction I was going to take it. And where I'm at right now is it feels like we are on the precipice of a new chapter in Ja Morant's basketball career. When you realize what happened last year with the injury and then all the suspension and all the stuff, like, it feels like we are turning the page. He's in his mid-20s now. He's coming off of this. You know, this is the redemption tour, so to speak. Like, if there's ever a Last Dance type of documentary about Ja Morant, not saying there will, but just if there was, then this would be the start of a new episode. And, well, where does that take it? Where does that leave us or take us in 4 years? He'll still be in his prime. And so if he's healthy, then a healthy Ja Morant who's in his late 20s and in his prime should absolutely be a part of that team when you look at some of the guys who are going to be phasing out from an age perspective. So, I mean, I think there's a 50-50 chance, you know, that Ja Morant is on that Olympic team in 4 years.
One thing that really feeds his you know, candidacy, the relationship with Nike is still very strong. He's selling a lot of shoes. Of the young players, he's probably, you know, at the top of the shoe sales list, and Nike probably likes that a lot.
Yeah, but Gabe, I was told that
they have nothing to do with it, huh?
Right. Yeah, I'm sure Jaylen Brown's still kind of talking himself into that one, for sure. But yeah, that's a great point. The marketability, the visibility. I mean, he's already there. And I think if Ja Morant had stacked a 23-24 season, kind of like what he had done the previous 2 years, there's a pretty good chance he would have made the team this cycle ahead of Derek White or a Tyrese Halliburton. I mean, the game is there. Now it's a question of the health. I mean, honestly, that to me at this point is a bigger concern than the off-court stuff. I really actually believe Ja Morant's going to get all the off-court stuff resolved, and that's not going to be an issue anymore. You just worry about the health when you talk about a guy who missed so much time, a guy who plays the way he plays. You know, we all know the Derrick Rose comparison, whatever. That's probably my biggest concern, I guess, over Ja Morant.
Is the off the court stuff? I know you sort of mentioned it already, but Connor, you know, expressed himself on this a little bit earlier. He just thinks it's overplayed and it's getting annoying at this point. It happened in 2022. He didn't have any type of, you know, criminal charge because of it. Do you think it's just a little too much at this point? Every time he's brought up, we bring up what happened in a Denver nightclub, you know, mm-hmm. where he's got a gun. And we bring up on Thanksgiving when he's got a gun that he called a lighter. Like, is it just getting to be a little bit too much?
Well, it's just the latest memory in the public's collective psyche over who Ja Morant is. That he, because of the injury, was not able to give them something on the basketball court to talk about instead. So that the beginning of that redemption tour has been delayed. And once it begins, I think the narrative shifts. And I think we go back to talking about Ja Morant, the basketball player. And Ja Morant is also, I think, going to be pretty visible and intentional about you know, being a community leader, and he's already doing that. I mean, yep. you see him clips of him at the basketball camp, and you see him thanking the Murray State fans for sticking with him through all of his troubles when they induct him into their Hall of Fame. So, you know, all the signs are there that John Morant's taking the steps that he needs to take. And I mean, once he goes up there and dunks on somebody a couple of times, then I think we're done with the off the court stuff for the most part. And the story then becomes, you know, his redemption and his return to stardom. So that's my hope. That's me sort of casting my wishes. But I think there's a really good chance that's kind of where this goes.
Yeah. Now, final thing, you cover college basketball as well at CBS Sports. This is David Cobb, and I'm talking to at David W. Cobb on X. The George Mason basketball program and the Bahamas trip that never was. What do you know about that? What can you tell me about that? That seems wild. Looks like they were sort of screwed out of $180,000. Their donors are probably not happy about that.
Oh, can you imagine? And that hurts a program of that size. I mean, yep. They don't have a football cash cow to fund their athletic department. I mean, the basketball program is the moneymaker at a place like George Mason. And then you get kind of wrangled up into a raw deal, man. But it's not shocking. You had to know that something like this was going to happen at some point. Because, look, we've seen Memphis go down there to some of these Caribbean destinations. And some of the teams they're playing are comprised of, you know, semi-pro / amateur players who work other jobs and sometimes show up late to the games because they get stuck in traffic, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, something like this was bound to happen eventually, where you get one of these off-season tours and it just falls apart. It's unfortunate, and it really stings a department like that you know, needs that money.
But they outsource it to a group called the Seven Group. And I was thinking about this. Don't you have enough people on staff to just sort of do it in-house, figure out how you're going to make that tour in-house, schedule the games yourself? I know George Mason doesn't have the most resources, but I think they have enough resources to be able to not outsource all of that work for somebody else.
Or at the very least, have the resources to vet the company that
Correct.
You're going into to business with.
Well, and also they did vet them. I mean, that the Seven Group, I guess, is a spinoff of another group that's done plenty of these tours in the past for other college basketball programs.
Well, I don't know. It's it's sad. Maybe they should have gotten some references. You know,
I guess.
Dang,
so.
Like that stinks, because those foreign trips are big for building chemistry, get some extra practice time, a little game action. I mean, I'd be mad.
My real question that I haven't gotten an answer on, where's the $180,000? Like, where's it at? Because apparently there were no flights booked, no hotels booked, no games booked. So, like, where did that damn $180,000 go that they gave to the Seven Group? Somebody needs to do a deep dive and figure that out.
Well, it's not going to be me, but it's like college basketball's version of the Fire Festival.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Fire Festival.
We got to have Netflix do it. I will let Netflix take that assignment.
What was that guy's name? What was it? Alongside Ja Rule, like Billy something or other? Does he have the money? Does he have the $180,000?
Right. I don't know.
Billy McFarland. That's what his name was. Billy McFarland.
Good memory, man. That I've tried to put the Fire Festival behind me, but yeah, George Mason got caught up in the college basketball version of it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, David, I appreciate it. We'll talk again Wednesday.
All right, brother. Thanks.
Yes, sir. That's David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. And he's brought to you by Oxbow, family-owned and operated retail store that's been in Memphis for over a decade, and you have grown to love them. And they are located very, very conveniently off of Poplar. And it is off Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco station right there, 964 June Road to be exact. Two-story storefront, kind and courteous staff. Earl the dog's in there. Pet Earl the dog. Pat him on the head. Tell him that I sent you. He is an A-list celebrity here in Memphis. He should be treated like an absolute king. But that top floor, they have hunting and outdoor essentials. They have your guns, all of the gear that you could possibly need to take your hunting trips whenever you decide to do that. But on the bottom floor, gift-giving destination of the city of Memphis. You can buy a gift for somebody else, or you can just go buy a gift for yourself. They have the best clothing and the best brands: Gentile, Free Fly, Fair Harbor, Duckhead, Mizzen and Main, polos, button downs, pants, shorts, slacks, whatever you need, they have. And they have your favorite teams as well. And they have vintage tees that you definitely need to pay attention to. But they have Grizzlies, they have Tigers, they have your SEC favorites: Tennessee, Arkansas, Alabama, Ole Miss, you name it, they have it over at 964 June Road at Oxbow. But they also have sports memorabilia, vintage vinyl. They have your tailgating gear. If you get to the Grove, you get to Tiger Lane, wherever you like to enjoy your tailgating, they have cups, coolers, koozies, tumblers, everything you could possibly need to enjoy yourself on a college football Saturday. But make sure you get over to 964 June Road. And if you don't get to 964 June Road, go online to shopoxbow.com. Again, that's shopoxbow.com. And you can enjoy their selection right there online using your PC, using your Mac, whatever you use. And then you can use my promo code as well. When you fill up that shopping cart with whatever your heart desires, use The Gabe Show. All caps, no spaces, The Gabe Show. You'll get 20% off that online order at shopoxbow.com. But whether you're going online or in-store to 964 June Road, remember to shop local, shop Oxbow. Now we need to go ahead and grab a break on that note right here on The Gabe Kuhn Show. And when we come back, we have the AP Top 25 preseason college football poll to discuss right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Top 25 has come out for college football, and it's relatively chalky compared to what we saw with the coaches poll. I'll go ahead and go through the top 10. One is Georgia, two Ohio State, three Oregon, four Texas, five Alabama, six Ole Miss. I'll get to that in a second. Seven Notre Dame, eight Penn State, nine Michigan, and then 10 Florida State. Ole Miss ranked at six. It's phenomenal because this is the first time they have been ranked that high since Archie Manning was on campus. It does show the amount of work that Lane Kiffin has done to try to turn over this roster in his relatively short time at Ole Miss. It's damn impressive what he's been able to do. And this year, you know, as opposed to years past, you know that the offense is going to be built in. You have Jackson Dart. You're going to have Trey Harris back. You have Juice Wells. You have really good wide receivers on the outside. You have Ulysses Bentley, even though Quinshon Judkins left, so your run game is still going to be very good. Your O-line is still taken care of. But I think more so than in years past, defensively, you have the ability to wreak havoc. You have guys on that side of the ball that you got out of the transfer portal that can really make things happen. And I think there's two guys up front that you have to point to. One is the princely Yunan Milan. He came from Florida. I don't know if I'm saying his last name right. I would almost guess that I'm not saying his last name right. But he's a guy who had 9 sacks last year, a year ago at Florida. Really good edge rusher. Big, tall guy, 6'5", right around 250 pounds. He's a guy that can make something happen. And then a guy that is from the city, Walter Nolan, up front. Walter Nolan is definitely highly thought of, and I think he can have a really, really good year. So I think this is the year, and then honestly, the AP poll reflects this. This is a year where the defense can be very, very dominant, can be a top 25 group. They're going to have to get over that hump. I still think there's some questions about them in regards to the pace they play with, everything else. But to see Ole Miss in that top six, to have their highest ranking in the preseason AP poll since Archie Manning was on campus, I think that is telling of what the country, what the media thinks of this team heading into the 2024-25 season. Also, shout out to Brett McMurphy for these notes. Ohio State is ranked number two. They've been ranked in the top two of the preseason poll for the 18th time in school history, sixth time in the past 9 years. Ohio State, and do with this what you will, has never won a national title when starting the year ranked number one or number two in the country. That's an insane stat, but it does hold to be true. They have never won a national title when they've been ranked number one or number two in the country. Number four, Texas, is ranked in the top five for the first time since 2010. The Longhorns started number five that year, and then they finished unranked. Hopefully this year's not like that, but I do get the sense, and I've been talking about this the past couple of weeks, Texas may be a little bit overvalued this year. They had an injury to C.J. Baxter, their starting running back, who is a speedster scat back that they expected big things out of after Jonathan Brooks is off into the NFL. So that's something that hurts them off the top. But then you look at the outside, no more Xavier Worthy. You have no more Jordan Whittington, who had a really good weekend, by the way, in his preseason debut with the Rams. And Sean McVay seems to think he's going to be sort of the next Puka Nacua of that offense, but we'll see how that all ages. But on the defensive side, they lost their two big guys on the interior, Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy. I just get the sense, even at number four, even with what they were able to do to get to the college football playoff last year, I get the sense that Texas is a little overvalued. Now, they could show me completely wrong,
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time we get into season, but they lost a lot more than I think we are leading the general public to believe, and people need to pay attention to that. And then the final thing, last time that Alabama was ranked number 5 to start the year, they were number 5 in 2009. It was Saban's third season on the job, and when they were ranked number 5, they beat Texas and won a national title. They beat Texas and won a national title. And I think that's a team, sort of on the contrary of Texas, that I believe we're undervaluing a little bit. Now, you'll say they're a top five team. I don't necessarily think that ranking shows how undervalued they have been this offseason. I think when you look at the odds, they're plus 750 to win the SEC. I think that's where you find them sort of under the radar and undervalued. I know they've moved on from Nick Saban. I know that he is not really a major part of that program, although he will be on the sidelines and, you know, off to the side. He's got a $400,000 job that he still has in that athletic department. But Kalen DeBoer has won wherever he's gone. He has been phenomenal. What he took over at Washington was a complete you-know-what show. They were 5-7. They fired Jimmy Lake in the middle of the season. He turned that around in two seasons and went to a national championship at Washington. So you look at the coaching, they have it. But when you look at the talent, it's the same talent that they had last year. You have the O-line up there, Tyler Booker, Caden Proctor, all of these, Elijah Pritchett, all these guys up there that will start. Defensive side of the ball, you've lost a little bit. You still have Malachi Moore, who's going to be a fifth-year guy. Jalen Milroe with Kalen DeBoer, I have a lot of hope about him. He can uncork the deep ball, and what does Kalen DeBoer do best? He lets you uncork the deep ball. He also can use your legs. We look at Michael Penix Jr. at Indiana when Kalen DeBoer was his OC. We saw that Michael Penix Jr. was able to use his legs. So I think what Kalen DeBoer will do in utilizing Jalen Milroe will put him sort of at the top of the Heisman rankings, and I think this Alabama team will definitely be pushing for an SEC championship this year. I think it is very, very possible that we are undervaluing them as compared to Texas and Georgia. I think this Alabama team will be very good. Now, where you're asking, where's Memphis at? Memphis ended up sort of in that 34 range in the others receiving votes. They got 16 votes in the AP Top 25, which is not all that bad. It's not terrible. But when you look at who they are behind Boise State, who was third in others receiving votes, and they were behind Liberty, who was sixth in others receiving votes. So in the AP poll, they're not thought to be the best of the group of five, but in the coaches poll, they certainly are. I think there's a little bit of a divide, between what the coaches think and what the media thinks. But generally speaking, I think that comes down to Ryan Silverfield. I think the media is holding out to see what Ryan can do, where a lot of coaches have seen the trajectory that this program is on and are starting to understand that he has sort of grabbed hold of this program and understand what he needs. He's using the transfer portal better, got the NIL money. But I think there is that divide, and I think it's pretty apparent to see.
Yeah, it seems like, though, overall, pretty good top 25. You know, it seems like it mostly makes sense. It doesn't seem like there's any huge snubs from the top 25. Most of the placing, I think, makes a lot of sense. So, you know, honestly, one of the better ones we've seen.
The one thing I do find a little bit strange, especially in this year in particular, I did want to see in the coaches and the AP poll if they were going to put a group of five team in. Because ultimately, you're going to have a group of five team probably in that top 20 range by the end of the year, and you're going to have a group of five team participating in the college football playoff.
Right.
I was hoping that both of these polls would try to project to a certain extent who would ultimately be in there, but that's not how it ultimately worked out. You have all of the group of five teams that they believe in on the others receiving votes category. But it is kind of strange to me, and it shouldn't be that strange. But a lot of the middle of the pack teams in these conferences just get benefit of the doubt, where the group of five teams that are at the top of the class don't really get the benefit of the doubt. Most people want to see them do it on the field before they sort of give them that crown. Whereas, you know, the Iowas of the world, the NC States, the USC, who came in at 23 after a 7-5 year, just feels like they get the benefit of the doubt in the preseason polls, where a lot of the teams that seemingly are very good, have a lot of returning starters, will no doubt be sort of 9 or 10 win teams in that group of five range, just don't get that type of treatment. And it has to do with schedule, has to do with politics. I understand that. But it's a different year. You're going to have one of those teams in the college football playoff competing for a national title. I thought this year would be a little bit different. But, hey, I think ultimately no real issues with the top 25 that the AP poll sort of put out there for the preseason. Now let's go ahead and grab a break. And when we come back, we're going to hop into small talk. And we have to talk about Jordan Childs, who won the bronze in the floor routine for the United States. That medal is up for grabs now. That medal could potentially, and looks like it will potentially, be taken away from her. We'll tell you why that is and what the USA is doing to try to get it back next.
Here on 92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, Jordan Childs' bronze medal in the women's floor exercise has been stripped. The Court of Arbitration for Sport, the CAS, voided an on-floor appeal by Childs' coach, the USA gymnastics coach, that vaulted her to third. They said, CAS, that the appeal came in 4 seconds beyond the one-minute time limit for scoring inquiries. Now, the U.S. Olympic Committee says it wanted to appeal. I think the update on that is USA Gymnastics was notified by the Court of Arbitration for Sport on Monday that their rules do not allow for an arbitral award to be reconsidered even when conclusive new evidence is presented. We are deeply disappointed by the notification and will continue to pursue every possible avenue and appeal the process, including to the Swiss Federal Tribunal, to ensure the just scoring placement and medal award for Jordan. Now, when you look at the conclusive evidence that they're talking about, the first notification from Childs' coach came at 47 seconds in that minute period. The second one came at 55 seconds. So they're making an arbitrary decision after the fact to try to strip this bronze medal away from Jordan Childs, who I think ultimately earned it. Now, what I would say is, if I am Jordan Childs, if I'm USA Gymnastics, I'm on the plane from Paris back to the United States of America, you know what I'd say? Come get it. Come get it. You want this bronze medal? Come take it away from me, out of my freaking hands. You have to get this out of my hands, or I'm not giving it back. Because this is absolutely ridiculous. When it's very clear from conclusive video evidence that at 47 seconds and 55 seconds, the coach asked for an appeal. They're saying it came at 104. It is absolutely insane. And when they asked for this, you know, scoring inquiry and it came back, I don't know why it has to be an arbitrary one-minute window anyway. If you're going to change a score, you're going to change a score anyway. You screwed up the scoring on the front end. give her her damn bronze. But I have seen people out there saying, yeah, we know that the world, you know, the International Olympic Committee and the CAS already saw how good that the United States is at sport in general. Now they're going to see how good we are at our other sport litigation.
Time to call in the McDonald's coffee lawyer. Let's see what happens. You thought we assembled the Avengers for the Olympic basketball
team.
You better get ready for the Avengers with litigation. They're coming.
Wait.
It's absolute trash that they're trying to take this bronze medal away from her. It's very clear that not one but two appeals came in within the time frame, and now they're trying to say, well, you know, we can't overturn the decision that we made. It's like, well, you already overturned the decision that you made.
Yeah.
So, and now,
here's my other thing. Why does it come like a week later?
No, I don't know.
That's the strange
thing. It's complete trash. I have not seen one actual reasoning for them to not, at least at the very least, be able to split the gold or the bronze medal. Just have both of them get one.
Yeah, Anna Barbosu is the other one that she'll move into third with this decision from Romania. And I was sad the day.
I was sad
for her watching her, but also I was very happy for Jordan Chiles.
I'm not
now,
that sad.
Now at this point, now I'm just sort of annoyed with the situation. But I would say this to Jordan Chiles. I'd say this to USA Gymnastics. You want this medal? Come freaking get it. Come to our gym and take it out of my hands. If that's the route we want to go with this thing, make sure you come get it. We were on the way home after the closing ceremony when you notified us of this decision. It's arbitrary. It's disgusting. It's stupid. Come get this damn bronze medal. That's what I'd be telling them right now. That's what I'd be saying on the phone. You want it? Come get it.
Yeah, it's absolute. Because what bothers me, too, is that it was the judge's mistake.
Yes.
The judges made a mistake. Team USA corrected them in the correct time frame, and then somehow she gets her bronze medal taken away. Tell me how that makes sense.
Well, I will say this. USA Gymnastics, they will continue to go down this path. And I don't know if it ultimately ends up with the bronze medal being held up for Jordan Chiles, but that's how it should end. It's stupid. It's so dumb. How arbitrary is it? Oh, you asked for the appeal 4 seconds too late. We're really going to take a bronze medal away from a deserving woman for 4 seconds. 4 seconds of time lapsing. You're going to take away a lifetime of achievement from this girl, from this woman. You should be ashamed of yourself. Like, think about how dumb that sounds. Stupid. But again, Jordan, USA Gymnastics, Simone Biles, get on the phone. Say, come get it. You want it? Come get it. Take it away from us. But that'll do it for hour number two. Hour number three is on the way. And we have some NFL training camp stories to talk about, including the CeeDee Lamb, Hassan Reddick, Brandon Ayuk contract disputes. That's next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive in the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.